Hey, Bobby Manning here. Welcome to Dome Theory. We're back. The Celtics are champions. We celebrated for a week, and now we're back at it. And to get into some draft coverage, because, of course, the draft is here within a week of the championship parade. Nima is back on Dome Theory. Appreciate you being here, Nima, out in Vegas.
Yeah, been a while. I think last time I was on here was when I was in New York. Lifelong Dome Theory listener, former roommate of Bobby Manning at one point for like a week. but happy to be on. I haven't really done a lot of podcasts in a long time, but always happy to do something with the great Bobby. So it's a fun class. I'm excited for tomorrow. It's going to be a fun 2-day draft. I saw a lot of the players and their agents and stuff got into New York in the last couple of weeks or last couple of days. So I'm excited. It's going to be fun. I have no idea what's about to happen tomorrow. So it's going to be a thrill for sure.
So have you worked with any of the guys in this class? Do you know any of them like personally?
There's a handful. I've been in a few gyms this summer. Got to see a handful of these guys up close. A few of them were guys who entered the draft last year while I was at Impact. So guys like Blake Hinson, who's in the draft this year from Pitt. I worked with him a lot last year whenever I was at Impact. A couple other guys. So, you know, I got to see a handful of these guys up close. But, you know, not really a lot of guys that are at the top of this class. There's also, you know, a lot of internationals at the top of this class. So, you know, some of them, their first times really, really being in the States was this summer. So, you know, it's a very interesting class this year. A lot can happen.
So who are some of your favorite guys? Who do you think are going to be some of the best guys in this class? Because this is a weird class. I'd almost compare it to 2013, where there were 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 even guys tossed around as number one picks, possible number one picks in this class throughout the course of the year. It seems like it's narrowing down to a guy or two at this point. But really, it looks like any one of the top 10, maybe even someone outside of it in this class, could end up becoming the best player in this class. Yeah. It's amazing how Donovan Clingan's stock has risen all the way up to potentially being the number one pick after the championship year at UConn. Not a typical kind of number one pick productivity or player type there, but that's the kind of class this is. And it's a weird class too, because the Hawks jumped up 9 spots to go to number one, which isn't normal. The Rockets jumped up pretty high to number 3. So you have some teams that are kind of in win now mode at the top of the board, or teams that are trying to get back into the playoff picture up there alongside some of the rebuilding teams. So who do you think, who are multiple guys that you could see being the best in this class?
Yeah, I'm really interested to see what the Hawks do with this first pick, if they take somebody or if they trade it. I know there hasn't been a lot of talks about it, but you have Capella, you have Okongwu. That's not really a reason why you don't draft Sarr. But you have two bigs, you know, one that's currently a starting level big, and Okongwu, who, you know, I feel like his potential is a lot higher than what he's shown in the league. You can start him and try and figure it out. But Sarr is a great player. I really liked watching him at OTE. He showed a lot of skills with the ball, especially, you know, like for a big man, it's very rare to see a guy who's, you know, able to attack closeouts, able to get to the rim, kind of has a decent stroke, but really defensively, he's a great player as well. I think he's an interesting fit for the Hawks at one, but, you know, the Hawks are, anything can happen there. You know, they could be trading Trae Young. They could be trading DeJounte Murray. They could be going all in on youth, or they could trade number one to try and get another player to pair with those two. Rizashay is another guy who I think can go number one. I don't have him number one on my board. I have Alex Sarr. But, you know, good skills for a wing player, able to do everything offensively that you would need him to do. He's not somebody who really pops to me as a number one guy. But in this class, you kind of take a little bit of fit as well as, you know, who you think can be instant value. Talking about instant value in this draft, some guys that I think are going to be favorites for the Rookie of the Year award are Donovan Clingan, like you mentioned. I think if he goes to a team that doesn't have a starting center ahead of him, he's going to be the guy who starts. And, you know, he's a shot-blocking demon. He's a great defender. He's going to clog the paint. He's got good ground coverage for his size. And he moves pretty well. It's not really much like Zach Edey, who, you know, he kind of lumbers up the floor. Like, Klingon actually moves well for his size. And I like Edey too, but, you know, I think Klingon, his upside is really high. I think it's just defensively, the things that he can do around the rim, he deters so many shots. And you watch guys play those, that UConn team, and the paint was just untouchable, you know? And so I think that's what he brings to an NBA team. You take away the paint from some of these NBA teams and you make the game way, way, way harder, because everything is paint or 3-point line. And so you got a 7'3" elite shot blocker at the rim. It makes it really hard, and he doesn't really need to switch. You can play him and drop really well. He does a good job of staying in front of guys when he needs to, and you can switch off him really quickly. I think that he's probably one of the more instant contributors in this draft. Somebody who, he's a little bit lower in the draft. He's still in that lotto range. I had him, you know, top five really early on, was Devin Carter. From Providence. You know, this is a two-guard swingman type player who can handle the ball. He didn't have great shooting years his first few years in college, but has really improved each year. This year was a great shooter for Providence, shooting from, you know, past NBA range, a couple feet behind NBA range, and knocking it down really well. Also just a scrappy defender who gets the job done. He can play on and off the ball. He cuts well, moves off ball well. He does everything you need of a swingman, you know, an off-ball guard. And he's someone who I think can come in and play immediately. This draft is a little bit older. You got 22, 23-year-olds who are at the top of the class, just because the freshman class wasn't very good, and COVID and whatever else you might have of it, you know, the extra years of college. But he's someone who I think can contribute immediately. You're talking about a little bit lower in the draft, just some guys that I like, you know, Terrence Shannon Jr., who had that case against him. He got exonerated. I think that kind of messed with his draft stock throughout the year. People didn't really want to take him seriously throughout the
year. I've watched a little bit of him. He's explosive, you know, cutting passing lanes.
He's extremely explosive, and he's got good size, man. He's 6'7", he's 220 pounds. He can play the 2-3. He can probably play the 4 if he puts on a little bit more weight. You know, in the NBA, you got to be able to have guys who can kind of play up. And I think he can do it. He can shoot the ball really well. He's able to handle the ball. And he's also somebody who, you know, he's a fifth-year senior. He's 24 years old. But the last 4 years, he's been considered a draft prospect. And he just returned to school and transferred and returned to school and transferred. And, you know, he's not a nobody, like – or not that this guy's a nobody, but not somebody who emerged – this year, like a Dalton Connect, you know, former D2 transfer who gets a great fit in Tennessee and is lighting it up. You know, it's not like that. Terrence Shannon Jr. has been a top 100 guy in high school, an NBA level prospect for the last 3-4 years. And I think, you know, he stuck it out, stuck with Illinois. And, you know, he showed this year that he can really help an NBA team. A couple other guys that I really like towards the back, I would say Dayron Holmes. I think he's very Naz Reid-esque. He can do a little bit of everything on the floor. He can dribble. He's going to be great in, like, DHO settings. He's going to be a great short roll guy. But he's also a pretty decent defender. He, you know, A-10 competition is significantly weaker than what he's going to see in the NBA. I don't think he's going to be able to guard the 5 early on. But I think – you know, with a little bit of work, he can become mobile enough to guard, you know, some of the quicker NBA 4s, as well as, you know, putting on just a little bit more weight will help him guard the 5 a little bit easier. I like his game a lot. I watched a lot of Dayton the last couple of years, especially when they had Tumani Kamara, another guy I was really high on who's on the Blazers now.
He was great.
He had a fantastic rookie year. Yeah, I was really happy about that. I had him first round, and I mean, I think he was a top 20 rookie this year, even though he was on.
He was in the Lillard trade.
Yeah, he was in the Lillard trade, and he was a contributor in that Portland team. Although, you know, you might have been able to be a contributor on that Portland team. But you know, he had a great season. And then I guess last guy I want to shout out on this setting is Jalen Tyson from Cal. Also another do-it-all wing. He's got a great shot.
He's been a guy mentioned in the mix at 30 for Boston, I've heard.
Yeah, and I think that's a good fit. You know, you play him off ball. He's able to attack closeouts. He's able to shoot off the catch. He's a smart player. He knows what he's supposed to do. And if you go watch some of his film, he's got great counters going downhill. He knows how to when to get off the ball whenever the defense collapses. And he's somebody who can really help offensively. Defensively, you know, he struggled a little bit throughout his college career, but, you know, at the NBA level, if you can play offense, the defense will come. But if you can't play anything on offense, you're not getting on the floor. And I know some people think it's the other way around. If you can play defense, you know, you're going to be in the league. But you can be the best defender in the league, and Matisse Thybulle gets 20 minutes a game, and Andre Roberson's out of the league. So you got to be able to knock down some shots. You got to be able to attack off the dribble. You got to be able to make that extra pass. And I think Jalen Tyson does all of that. And there's no reason for him to – really become a bad defender in the NBA. I think it all comes down to effort. And at Cal, he had every rep go through him. So when you're the fifth best player on the floor, now you got to lock up. And he's I'm pretty sure it's a plus wingspan. You know, I think he's a player who can really help most teams pretty quickly too. I don't think he's not necessarily ready, but I think if he's in a role where he's playing 10, 12 minutes a game and you really just need him to go be a knockdown shooter, and sometimes you got to make an extra swing pass, like, he's going to be perfect at that. So those are some guys I really like in this draft. There's a lot of international dudes too. We talked about, you know, Risashe at the top of the draft. You got guys like Pacome Dottier and you know, Bobby Klintman, who's in Australia. He was at Wake Forest. You got some other international guys that are, you know, in this class, but those are some of the guys that are kind of in that first round range that I think can be instant contributors and really be a good value in their first contract. I think one of the biggest things with this draft, if you think about it from a team building perspective, is like, how many of the guys in this class are really worth an $11 million a year contract? You know, at right, number one.
Especially in the first round.
I had that number one pick. I don't think I'm taking anybody. Are any of them going to be MLE level replaceable players in their first 4 years? And, you know, maybe, yeah, you know, eventually, but it's those first couple of years might be really tough. So there's going to be some really good value guys, you know, guys in the 20s who are getting paid $2-3 million who might return a top 10 pick. And that's what you go for. You know, you got to, I think in this draft, you go for the guys who are going to help you in the first contract. And if they can't help you in the first contract, you know, if they're a second contract or third contract guy, go get them then. But this isn't, you know, not a lot of the guys in this class are worth paying, in my opinion, what the rookie scale is. And so you got to just find value when you can get it.
Yeah, and that brings us to Boston, one of those teams later in the first. There's a lot of teams in that playoff mix. The Knicks have a couple picks. Minnesota's still on the board there. Denver, I think they're one of the teams that would maybe take a look at Dottier there, who you mentioned, and has been in the Boston gym. Maybe a stash guy. I think you'd love, like you mentioned, to not pay a guy, to stash him, to have him develop overseas if you like him, and they're on the younger side, and then you have the best of both worlds in a couple of years where you bring them over and start the clock then, after they've gotten a little bit more seasoning. But that can go both ways. Sometimes you just never see those guys. He'd be interested in that aspect. I've read that he doesn't want to be stashed. So that could be interesting there too, as he tries to angle his way the team he specifically wants. Some of the other names I like for Boston that might just be a little too high are Filipowski, who I didn't love at Duke, but I think has a good mold of a player. He's 20. He shoots. He's 7 foot.
He can learn a lot from Horford and Porzingis. He can learn a lot from Horford and Porzingis. Because you look,
and that's
at,
the kind
like,
of big.
Like. A lot like how Horford played kind of earlier in his career, and you know, you kind of become a more modern big. I think he can. You know, you spend a year or two behind Horford and really figure out how to be that 5'4" mold stretch big who can dribble, pass, shoot, and you know, be a good screener, do all that. Be that all-around player that Horford is. You take a year or two and learn that, he'll be all right. So I think that would be a great fit for Boston, and he fits the Boston mold a little too.
Yeah, but again, is he there at 30? I don't know. It's hard to imagine.
That's it's gonna be tough. Yeah.
Khalil Ware, same deal. Like all that athleticism, the willingness to shoot threes a little bit. They love those type of guys now. Robert Williams way back, Derek Lively last year. Those guys have been big hits in the different places that they've gone. And it depends on the team you land with, but hard to imagine him being there at 30. So what are we talking about now? Ryan Dunn, I know, has been through the Boston gym. That feels like a guy who could be there at 30 just because there's no real offensive game to talk about there. Baylor Shireman, is he there at that point? I know they've had him in the gym. Those are the shooters, some of the wing types actually you're looking at that spot. Big man might be a little tougher at 30. I just feel like a lot of them are going to be gone at that point.
Yeah, I mean, Shireman, I like. He's a great shooter. I've talked to some of his old coaches, and they're all very high on him. They all say he's a great guy.
He's almost 24, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, he was at, what was it, South Dakota or South Dakota State beforehand. And, yeah. He played great there too. But, when he went to Creighton, he kind of blew up completely. He was a great shooter for them. Just the way he moves off ball is awesome. And I think, whenever you look at, like, some of the other high-profile shooters in this draft, like Dalton Knecht as well, who's projected top 10, like, the difference in those two guys, in my opinion, what they do is not that big to the point where one of them is, ranked in the 30s and the other one is ranked in the lottery.
He also shot 8 threes a game last year, which is pretty good. To be able to shoot 38 on 8 threes a game is pretty impressive.
Yeah. You mentioned Ryan Dunn. In my opinion, not very high on him. I talked a little bit, like I said, Tybull, Roberson, those kind of guys who just don't bring much for you offensively. It's hard to get them on the floor, no matter how good you are defensively. I will say, Virginia is a tough watch, as both of us Syracuse guys. Like, it can be hard to watch Virginia and really, like,
especially this year.
Yeah, that was, I'll be honest, I rarely got through a full game of Virginia because I was just, all right, it gets repetitive, it gets really stale, it gets really dull. But I watched Ryan Dunn airball layups and floaters multiple games. Like, it's gonna be, I wish he went back to school, but I get with the landscape of this draft, you can bank on what you can bank on. So
yeah, and his shot totals went down like 5 a game at the end of the year, I read. So not very aggressive either. But, Vecini says he's one of the best defensive prospects he's ever seen. Like you mentioned, you got to get on the floor to be able to impact the game defensively, though. And especially in Boston, Joe loves the threes. Joe loves spacing. Joe loves shooting. Doesn't seem like a fit. How familiar are you with Tyler Smith? That's a name I keep hearing. Seems like a name that could feasibly be there at 30. I think it's the opposite kind of discussion with him, where his offensive game's really intriguing, but his defense, a question. He's got 7'1" wingspan, which is good enough, I'd say, but at 6'9", 6'10", is he a center? It's probably the big question with him defensively.
I think he's more of a four. I don't think he can really play the five, but I think he's more of a four. Maybe, I mean, I don't think he's a three in the modern game. I like him a lot. He's a great shooter. Defensively, yeah, he struggled quite a bit decision making wise in the G League, but the G League defensive scheme and accountability, all of that is just, it's all
Ignite was kind of a mess this year, weren't they?
It was a mess. Yeah, I mean, I went to multiple Ignite games, and I've done work for Ignite before. It's a franchise that I'm sad to see go. And I've always, held highly, and not to say that they did anything really badly this year. I just think it's hard to grow when you have 8 young guys on the team playing in the G League against former NBA players and like 30-year-old vets. Even you see the new Phoenix team getting 2 former top 5 picks. They got I can't remember who else. They got Emmanuel Mudiay and somebody else. So you're playing teams like that have guys who are, well accredited, played multiple contracts in the NBA, but you have 8 young guys and, some guys who've never touched the league on the team. It's really hard to get going. And so you look at Ron Holland, you look at Buzelas, you look at Tyler Smith, like it's hard to establish, a culture. It's hard to establish, what's going to be going on a day-to-day, especially in games. And so establish roles. And I think they did the best with it, with what they could do out of it. But, you know, there's a lot of young, raw talent on that team. And it's hard. But I like Tyler Smith a lot, man. He's somebody that I've spoken really high on throughout this draft class. He plays well off ball. He has great size. He's a great shooter. It just the defensive decision making is really the big knock. But I think you can kind of chalk it up to you know, that's just how Team Ignite is. I mean, you look at like Jaden Hardy, for example. You know, when he was at Ignite, people wanted to talk about, oh, his shooting is bad, and he's not as good of a shooter as people think he is, and his defense is bad. But he's playing NBA Finals minutes because he's a good shooter. And I don't think he was that much of a liability defensively. Dallas defensively was kind of all over the place in that finals, but I don't think he was that much of a liability defensively. And he was in there because he was a good shooter. So just because his G League numbers weren't great when he was 19 jumping up from high school basketball, you know, that doesn't mean that much. And so Tyler Smith coming into Ignite, coming off of OTE play. And I'll say, I think OTE has done a great job of developing their guys. All their guys that come into the league who are, you know, quality players. You look at like the Thompson twins. Even you look at like Dominic Barlow in San Antonio, plenty of flashes for him. I think they do a great job of developing guys. I think they do a great job of getting guys to understand their role, understand what they're going to be in the NBA. And I think he's one of those guys who, you know, it might just be a product of the environment he was in pre-draft. So, you know, Ignite might not have been the best fit for him, but if he goes to a college team, I think he would have been perfectly fine. So, and his stock wouldn't be falling the way it is. But if he's there at 30, I think that's great value for the Celtics.
Yeah. Some of the other names they've had through, if any of these stand out to you, I know you mentioned, Mogbo from San Francisco. Ingram's a guy who I kind of like. The size for him and athleticism is definitely a question, but his shooting came a long way with North Carolina this year. You got Jalen Bridges with Baylor, who's in there. I know you like Enrique Freeman from Akron as well. And then from there, you got probably some more second-round possibilities. But Freeman, Bridges, Ingram, Mogbo, do any of those names stand out to you? Even Justin Edwards from Kentucky, I guess, is a little intriguing as one of the younger guys out of that mix.
I like Mogbo a lot. I watched a lot of University of San Francisco this year. I've worked with Mike Sharavyams, who's now going to Utah. Mogbo stood out a lot, and his story is pretty cool. You know, he was like, I think he was 6'1 as a senior, or maybe he was a junior, had a big growth spurt. He was a point guard his whole life, and now he's trying to figure out how to be a big. You watch the things he does on the court. He's bringing the ball up the floor for San Francisco often. He's great defensively. His rotations are awesome. He does a great job of
7'2 wingspan.
Yeah, he's got a long, long wingspan. And I think he's able to play kind of 3-4-5. I think he needs to be more willing to shoot. He wasn't very willing to shoot this year. You got to be more willing to shoot, but I mean, he was a guard before, and he wasn't not shooting the ball as a guard. So I think a little bit of it is, you know, I brought it up with Leonard Miller last year. Your mechanics become a lot different whenever you have a growth spurt. So like Leonard Miller went from 6'3 to 6'10 and he was shooting from the chest, and people were like, oh, his mechanics are terrible, but you have a 7-inch growth spurt in a year. It changes things. And, you know, it's hard to relearn everything, and it takes a little bit of time. So Mogbo grew about 7 inches, and he has to relearn how to jump and shoot and do all that in a proper way. And it's going to take a little bit of time. But what he does now and what he can do in year one is he's a great screener. He can play that short role really well. He's an amazing passer. Like, in my opinion, he's one of the best passers in this draft. And so, like, I think he's somebody who really fits the Boston mold, in my opinion, too. Like, he's a guy who can do a little bit of everything. He'll go and he'll help your stars get into the right place. But, you know, the thing with Boston is everybody is unselfish and everybody is willing to make the extra pass. Everybody's looking for the right shot. And he's somebody who's going to help you find that. And he's, you know, as unselfish as it kind of comes from in this draft. You know, he's always looking to make his teammates better. And he's someone who I think can really help Boston. So if he's there at 30 as well, I think there's a chance he slips into that second round just because he was listed, I believe, at 6'8 throughout the season. And I think he measured at the combine at 6'6. So I think that kind of deterred teams a little bit of like, okay, he's more of like a wing than he is a big. And he doesn't really shoot that much, but if he slides past there, and you said, what was the other pick that Boston has? Like 54?
54, yeah.
54. Not sure if he slips all the way to 54, but you know, if he's there at 54, that's a great get. Or if Boston trades into that early second round, that's also a great get. I'm also interested to see how that early second round goes. The 31 to 40 picks almost always get traded. If you go look at the last three, four draft classes, I believe it's like 8 out of those 10 picks get traded every single year. And so if you go and you have the 31, 32, 33, like I said, before we started the show, you know, there's going to be teams who have guys, you know, every team's board is pretty different this year. And there's going to be teams that have guys ranked in 16, 17, and now you can go pick him at 33 with essentially unguaranteed money. Like, of course I'm going to do that. I'm going to trade up. I might send you $4 million to trade up for that. So, you know, I think there's a lot of movement that's going to happen in this draft. I wouldn't be surprised if Boston buys into the second round to get another piece, just given their contracts. If you're able to get, you know, a low value contract who's able to contribute in year one or year two, you probably go for that. So if Boston's able to go and pick somebody with 30 and then pick somebody else with 34 or 35 and get two role players like that, you know, you got two guys in your top 10 rotation, top 11 rotation for $3 million combined, while you have the most expensive contract in the league on salary as well. So, you know, stuff like that, team building wise, this draft can get very interesting.
Yeah, because they could potentially lose all their bench guys over the next couple of years. And so you have to restock that. Walsh was a good start. I love what he did in the G League last year. A lot of growth for sure. The mold of a guy that I think they're going to be looking for here at this spot. I prefer a big guy. And so, Tyler Smith does intrigue me in that regard. He hasn't been through, I guess, for a workout, at least according to this list. But, you know, who knows if he slides there and they're surprised that he's at 30. Maybe you grab him anyway. You know, I like a lot of the stuff you just said there about Mogbo. Like, that does seem like the kind of guy, you know, you think back to Grant Williams, who was not a great shooter coming out of college. Didn't really have a three-point shot, but developed it. You know, similar size, it looked like, to him. This guy has more length. I like that. Someone that they can just acclimate into their system at that big man position, because they've done a good job with that. You think back to Cornette, you know, what they did with him, and he was a 7-footer, even 7'1" guy, so he had much more size than some of the smaller guys who've come through. But they've used Maine to develop these bigs into their system well. I thought what they did with Cato last year was great, and he's going to be back in that mix again. But you could lose Cornette here. You could even lose Tillman this year as well. So that's definitely their biggest position of need. But you're probably going to lose Hauser in a year, too. And you saw in the finals, Nima, you know, talking about guys on the wing who might not be the best defenders but can survive. That's what Hauser became. And his shooting was so good. It was such a bankable skill that he ended up having a great start to his career here in Boston. And the defense came along. So shooting, size, those are probably the two biggest things Boston's looking at here. Those are the two things I think they value the most. But versatility, passing, you mentioned that too. Those are things that I think they value as well.
Yeah, no, I think this is going to be a very interesting draft class for Boston. I would be interested to see them trade up a little bit too. Like you said, that like Filipowski might not be there. Khalil Ware might not be there. You know, even Dayron Holmes might not be there at that point. So if they're really looking for a big who they think can play in year one, why not trade up a little bit and try and get somebody?
You might need to.
You might need to, yeah. So I think there can be a lot of movement tomorrow all throughout the draft in the lottery. Like I said, like I wouldn't be surprised if Atlanta trades out of number one. I wouldn't be surprised if Houston trades out of number three. You know, if Sarr is gone, and even if Reed Shepard's gone, the Rockets have like five different wings who could all be starting. You know, they got Cam Whitmore, Tari Eason, Amen Thompson, Jabari Smith. Like, you're probably not picking a wing there just because it's so blocked off. And then Şengün's the guy you're building around. You're probably not taking a Klingon, or if Alex Sarr somehow slips to three, you might not even take Sarr. So I wouldn't be surprised if Houston trades out of three too. So, I mean, Spurs probably don't take two picks in the top eight. We were talking about that before the show. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if the Spurs trade out of one of those. You're going to get a lot of movement throughout this draft. You're going to get teams trading up to 20. You're going to get teams trading back to 50. I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of teams are looking at the draft right now, even today, a day before, and are like, we have no idea who's going to fall to us, so let's have a couple deals on the line ready for when 25 comes around and our guy's not there anymore. Let's make a call to Boston and make that trade, or let's make a call to Cleveland and make that trade, whoever it might be. So, it's gonna be a weird 2 days, and I don't know what the rules are in between the day one and day two draft. Are teams allowed to trade? Are teams allowed to make moves? Because once that first 30 is called and we get into 31, 32, 33 that next day, if teams are able to make trades, there's going to be a lot of movement going on. There's going to be a lot of GMs calling each other in that day span. Like, hey, we're trying to figure out how the start of the second round is going to go. So, it's going to be a really interesting 2 days. I think the 2 day draft makes it a little bit more fun. I think it also makes it a little bit more, it gives teams a little bit more movement in the second round. I think it lets teams make wiser and smarter decisions in the second round too. I feel like with this draft, like we said, there's guys in the second round, maybe out, who could end up being a top 15 player in this draft class. So, it's going to be a really interesting experience. I'm excited to see how it goes. I will say, like, out of the last five draft classes, this is probably the least I've studied the class, but it's the most excited I am for the actual day, because there's just going to be so much movement. And I don't think there's anybody, even you look at like the Wassermans and the Gavonis and the people like that, I don't think there's anybody who really knows what's going to happen tomorrow.
Right. And as far as Gavoni goes, he does have Dottier going to Boston at 30. Daron Holmes, a lot of buzz about him going to Denver at 28. Seems like he might have a promise there. So that's going to be something to watch for as well. The Shannons, Wares, Filipowski, they seem like they're in the 20 mix pretty firmly. Ryan Dunn as well, who we kicked around a little bit. As far as sneaking into that early second round, Tyson is going to be there, it looks like. Cam Christie's a name we didn't mention. Shooter, younger shooter as well, who's got some good size on the wing there. Max Christie's brother from the Lakers. Tyler Smith, I have to imagine he'll be there early second round. And then you get into some of the later guys like Justin Edwards and Mogbo. Seems like he could be like a mid-second rounder. And Harrison Ingram's another name that I looked at and kind of liked out of that mix there. So I think those are the mix of guys that are almost certainly going to be there for Boston, whether they stay at 30 or whether they move back just a little bit. Sharman's a big swing one to me, though, because they love shooting. That guy really seems like he can be a volume shooter at size. He's older, more experienced. So that mix of guys is who to watch for, I think, on the Boston front. Last question I got for you, Nima. Who do you think is the most underrated / could be the most surprising player in this class?
The most underrated, or who's the surprise? I think Isaiah Crawford from Louisiana Tech, honestly. He's somebody I'm looking at like rookie scale right now, consensus big board, not ranked in the top 60. Haven't seen him on a lot of boards. I got to watch him at Impact's Pro Day here in Las Vegas, and he does everything really well. He's an amazing defender.
So he's a guy at 54 potentially for Boston.
Yeah. So I think he's somebody who you could take at 54. He's a great all-around wing, great defender. He got hurt a lot throughout his college season. If you go and you watch the season when he played with Kenny Lofton, he had like, if you remember, Zaire Williams had that big ass leg brace whenever he was at Stanford. So did Isaiah Crawford. He wears goggles. He's an unconventional looking player. He kind of moves funny, but you know, he's an amazing defender, plays really well, knows when to like his switching is great. His defensive rotations are great. He knows when to jump gaps really well, but then offensively he can handle the ball. He can shoot pretty well. He knows how to move off ball really well. He's somebody I'm surprised is down at 67. I think if he would have transferred from Louisiana Tech and gone high major, a lot more teams would be on him. But talking with a few different scouts in the league, I know a lot of teams are, you know, he's kind of the guy who a lot of teams look at and are like, oh, like, yeah, we've heard about him. We've seen a little bit of him. He's intriguing, but he's not somebody that a lot of teams have really gone all in for, from what I've heard. But I think he's someone that teams should go all in for. I think if you're able to, like I said, in that second round, you're looking for guys who can contribute on that first contract. He's someone who I think contributes on that first contract. How well and over the course of 4 years, I'm not sure, but you know, second round contracts are 2+2 or 1+3 or 1+2 typically, and for the most part, non-guaranteed. I think the skill set he brings to the floor is phenomenal, and he can really, really help. Another guy who's not really brought up, and I'll be honest, I was not very high on when he was at Utah, but then once he went to Arizona and kind of bloomed a little bit, and then getting to see him a little bit this summer in workouts is Pelle Larsen. Mostly just a shooter at Utah. What I saw from his pro day was awesome, man. He was picking ball handlers. He was getting into, you know, passing lanes. He was dunking on guys, and it was all, you know, 3-on-3 half court stuff, all stuff that happens in the workout. And, you know, obviously there's a body of work of actual games to show behind it. But when you're playing a role in college, it's hard for you to bloom out of that role. He showed he's a great defender. He showed he can handle the ball. He's a smart player. And you have 4 years of showing that you're an awesome shooter to add on to that. He's currently, if I'm looking at rookie scale, I think he's ranked – I can't even see him on here. He's ranked 47. So he might not be there at 54, but again, that second round can be – all over the place. If he slips down to 54, he's another guy I think can really help Boston. And he's got good size too. Also, you know, like a 6'6", 6'7", wing, but more guard skills than a lot of the guys we've mentioned throughout the podcast so far.
All right. He is Nima. Want to shout out any of your work? Anything coming?
Nothing at the moment. You know, just appreciate you having me on. I'm kind of offline.
Where can the people find you on Twitter? You're off?
I'm still at FindingNima23. Currently private account, just going through a couple things at the moment. But, you know, hoping to get back into the swing of stuff next year. If you guys want to support my basketball work and some of my basketball people, go follow Swish Theory. I haven't been able to do a lot of stuff on there lately, but, you know, still trying to boost up my people over there. Go follow Swish Theory and follow my consulting firm, Next Up Basketball. We have a guy in the draft class this year. He was overseas, Jari Sani. I just want to shout him out. Great ball play, great guard, shoots the ball really well. Most confident guy I've ever met. And he backs it up with his play every time he plays too. He hasn't had any workouts this summer or anything like that, but he's a great player, great person, and he's gonna succeed. He's gonna get around into one of these summer leagues in a year or two. I guarantee it. So follow Next Up, follow Swish Theory. I'm sure if you're listening to Dome Theory, you follow Bobby Manning, but keep following Bobby Manning. He does amazing things, and he's a great human being. So keep supporting him.
All right. And Nima will be out at Summer League as well. If you want to get connected with him out there, I'll be there as well. As always, a great time. And we'll see who's going to be playing for Boston. Jordan Walsh, certainly. And maybe some of the overseas guys come back over. Drew Peterson is still in the mix with them a little bit, it looks like. So should be a fun team. Should be a fun week, as always, out there. Thanks again, Nima. Appreciate all the insight. And we'll talk to you soon.
Yes, sir. Appreciate you for having me on.